Hi, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hey, Patty, what's up?
Oh, how are you doing tonight?
Very well, thank you. You?
So, tonight, I have a special episode on the ghosts of Christmas. So, you know, we've always talked about stories of this stuff, but I found stories about ghosts that only haunt at Christmas, or ghosts that only appeared at Christmas, if you will. So I wanted to share some of these really interesting stories. Some of them are fascinating. I want to go into a whole series of stories of angels that only appear at Christmas. I'm working on that one now because I had no idea that there were so many angelic visitations at that point.
Wow.
In time.
Okay.
But
so if
we're working
I can,
on it.
Yep. If I can interject at this point, then if you are watching this or listening to it on any platform whatsoever, please consider clicking the subscribe button if you haven't already. If you are, we thank you very, very much for being one of our fold. Please consider clicking the like or give us a good rating on whatever platform you're also listening to. Also down below, you will find in the description, whether it be audio or video, a link to all of our various email, when we have a single email address, not various emails. We have a single email address, Facebook groups, Patty's blog. I think I even put a link to your books on Amazon. It's not an affiliate link, but you know, it's there in case you want to look at some of the books that Patty has put out that are still available at any rate.
Yeah, there's several still out there.
Right. And so with that, then I'm ready to hear about the Christmas
ghosts of Christmas.
Uh-huh.
So the first one I found was really kind of fascinating. So it actually starts in Egypt in 1923. There was a socialite gentleman by the name of Sir Philip Sassoon, and he was invited by Lord Carnarvon and Harold Carter, who discovered King Tut's tomb, to become part of the witness to the opening of the tomb, which would have been absolutely fascinating and amazing to see. He had heard about the curse and all of that, returned home, and he, to everybody's accounting, was not impacted by being there at the opening of the tomb. He wasn't one of the people who ever got ill. However, the series of events captured his imagination. So when he gets home, he lived at a place called Trent Park, which is a beautiful estate. And he rubbed elbows with people of the day like Charlie Chaplin and George Bernard Shaw, and he would host them here. And he began to think about this story about Sir Geoffrey Mandeville, who had lived in his property many, many, many years earlier, and who supposedly in ancient times had hidden, and when I say ancient times, I'm talking like 1347, so long ago.
Long ago.
Had hidden a treasure on the property, supposedly. And he began to wonder if he could find that treasure. So this whole series of events kind of got him into treasure hunting, if you will.
Okay.
So he decides to drain the moat and start digging up the property. And there are stories that Sir Geoffrey had haunted the property at one time, but the stories had died out a good 100-150 years earlier, and nothing had happened. He ended up draining the moat and finding like 5-foot thick walls and pulling up all this stone. I can't imagine the expense this must have had, not to mention the mess it would have been. And it's at that point that something happens. People start saying that they're seeing Sir Geoffrey. He was a very distinctive figure. There were paintings of him. He had this black cloak and this red and scarlet sash that he wore. And he started being seen, but only the first sighting was Christmas Eve. And then the story drops away. And then for 6 straight years on Christmas Eve, he's sighted by local villagers or by somebody. And then it stops. And then the story says that 6 years later, he's seen again. And then 6 years after that, he's seen again. Up through 2022 would have been the last attempt to see him. He haunts this moat area, protecting his treasure, or whatever it is there, and has done so for literally hundreds of years, had sort of faded away as though, you know, nobody was paying any attention. But this whole series of events, very much like, you know, when you do a remodeling on a house, it often stirs up the spirits, awoke poor Sir Geoffrey, and he only walks on Christmas Eve night down the lane in front of the castle, headed into town, and people have encountered him. And as I said, he's recognizable. There's photographs of his paintings that make it into the local papers and stuff. People have no doubt that that is who they're seeing.
Yeah, I've heard many things about, or your stories, not only yours, but others about, you know, yearly, but never every 6 years. That's, huh.
Here's,
plus it's a senatorial ghost.
In Virginia, there's a property, and I can find out more information if folks are interested, that is haunted by, I believe it's George Washington's mother. And I know it was her, she's associated with this property. Mm-hmm. And she only appears like every 3 years or something on a specific night. And they actually have watch parties for her. Like people go and they sit there and they wait to see her on the second floor balcony. So I've heard some, a very few, but a few stories where they only go every so many years. But I just thought that was an interesting little tale. And the fact that he stirred up the ghost, literally woke him up from the dead, if you will, by his actions, was interesting to me.
I take it he didn't find the treasure, though.
Nope, nobody has to this day found the treasure, but apparently Sir Geoffrey's still marching around making sure people don't.
Fair enough.
So this next story actually took place in the United States in 1961 in Ohio. So this was a woman who shared her own story. She was living in her family home with her sister and her sister's husband, and they co-owned and shared the property. And they had had a Christmas party the night before Christmas, and it was just a little family gathering and nothing major. And it was the afternoon before Christmas, and it was early because the sister's husband had to go to work that night, so he wanted a couple hours in the evening to rest. So they had just kind of had the party and everybody left by 4 or 5, and she knew that her sister and her sister's husband had laid down, and she could actually see from her bedroom. Her sister always had a habit, she was claustrophobic, of leaving the door open. Now, she saw her when she went into her room to settle down, and was on laid down on the bed and was reading a book, fell asleep. She woke up when she heard the latch of her bedroom door jiggling as though somebody was trying to get into her room. Her first thought being, oh, it must be my sister wanting something. So she rolls over, and she said it was dark out, this bright burst of light out of nowhere. And she put her hand up and she said, turn the light out, thinking it was like a flashlight or something. And it hurt her eyes. And she said it winked out. She turned on the light beside the bed and she sat up. She's like, what is going on? So she goes down the hallway, gets out of her room, goes down the hallway, and her sister and her sister's husband are still sound asleep. It's 8 or 9 o'clock. He gets up around the 9:45, gets ready to go to work at night. And, you know, so he's still sleeping. She goes back to her room and she sits back down in her room. She shuts her door. Now her door had a finicky latch and you had to jiggle it before you could open it. So it was very obvious whenever somebody was at the door. So she hears the latch jiggling. She opens up the door again, fully expecting her sister or her brother-in-law to be there, and nobody's there. And she's like, that's just weird. About 20 minutes later, she hears them stirring out in the living room. So she goes out and she says, hey, were one of you in my room tonight? And they're like, no, we've both been asleep. Why? And she's like, well, somebody was in my room tonight. Somebody opened the door and you had a flashlight or something. And they're like, no. Wasn't us. And she's puzzled. And she said she went back and she was sitting down in a room. And all of a sudden she thought, you know, before I fell asleep, I was thinking what a wonderful day this was, but how much better it would have been if our brother had been there. And she said, I always wondered the rest of my life if it was his spirit that lit the room so brightly. And when I groused at him, he took off and left, because he was that sort of person. He would have just left and not bothered anymore. So I just thought it was kind of cute and amazing story, you know, just because we think of ghost stories and we think of spirit stories as being, you know, these big scary things. And some of them are. We're going to talk about a few that are kind of scary and what have you. But sometimes it's just family coming to visit, too. You know, I can tell you stories of dead grandmas who've shown up at birthday parties for their grandchildren and been caught in pictures, or grandpa walking down the sidewalk and it's the anniversary of his birth or his death or some great, you know, event in their lives, things like that. So I, you know, I started thinking, why is it that Christmas is any different? People have a lot of meaning around Christmas. So I started looking for these stories and I found they were very easy to come by. There's literally 70, 80, maybe 100 I found and I had picked from these. And some of them, like I said, are just really sweet, and some of them are a little scary, sad, or whatever. So we're going to go over to England to the mid-1800s, and there was a young woman and her father who were coming home from a Christmas party, which would have been on Christmas Eve, and they're in their carriage, and this highwayman comes out and startles the horses and manages to get the carriage to stop. He offloads her and her father and goes to rob them. She's about a 15, 16-year-old girl. She's terrified. Now, she always kept, and people have to think about this, she kept a knife in, there's like apparently some sort of a holster that you could holster a knife on your sleeve. And she would always keep a knife when she traveled because there were a lot of highwaymen in the area. So he knocks her father unconscious, and now he's just got her to contend with. And he robs her, and then he reaches out to grab a hold of her, and she's terrified of what he's about to do, whether he's going to rape her or kill her or what, she doesn't know. And she pulls the knife out when he drags her close to him, and she stabs him in the ribs. Of course, he lets go. She takes off running. She's trying to find some, you know, some home, some place where somebody can render aid. And he's behind her for a little ways, but of course, the blood loss quickly makes him fall behind. And she finally does come to a house, and they go and get the constable and go back to where her father was. Her father was injured, but he was fine. And the young lady could barely speak, because not only was she terrified about what just happened, but it was the same bandit, the same robber who had robbed and killed her brother 2 years earlier. She recognized him. She had been in the carriage with her brother at the time that this had happened to him. And the highwayman was laying on the ground near the road, and he was dead. So they literally just unceremoniously gathered him up, dug a shallow hole and tossed him in, because, you know, he was the bad guy. Nobody was paying for a big funeral for this dude. Subsequently, ever since then, people have seen a young woman running down the road and this wounded highwayman chasing her. And this was seen for, this is still being seen today. Cars driving by encounter this and call the police. And it only happens on Christmas Eve nights. She relives those events of her life.
Which is interesting because, well, I'm assuming that she's now deceased.
But I'm guessing yes, she is, yes, yes I'm but sure.
The event, why would that? I don't want to know why. I just enjoy the story.
Well, and to be honest with you, it might not be her at all. I mean, like, I've known stories where characters appeared that were, they had no reason to want to appear, but they just became a part of the whole mosaic, almost like a old video being run. I can't imagine her terror when she looks up at this man who just robbed her and realizes in the moonlight, this is the man who killed my brother 2 years ago.
Yeah, shallow grave was probably more than he deserved.
Definitely. I agree with you completely. You know, and I have to tell you, England is just filled with these stories. There's a few in the United States, there's a few in Canada, but if you want to come across paranormal events on over the Christmas holiday, it's amazing how many there are in England. I probably hit 40 of them before I stopped reading. Wow. There's just so many. But then again, everything's so much older there. You know, we talk about, you know, so-and-so's house was 240 years old. They're talking about the 12th century. So more time has, you know, and life has gone by in those areas. So the next one I wanted to talk about was in England. There's a stately mansion there called the Roos Hall. And in the 16th century, it was one of the finest homes in the country. It was beautiful. But it also was it had a spooky negative vibe to it. People would talk about the gnarled trees. There was these gnarled oak trees. And one of them in particular was really awful because it was used as a gallows tree for the area. Mm. And it was the whole property from end to end just had ghost stories. There were just so many ghost stories. And, you know, there's a woman who looks out the windows of the second floor. There's a ghostly hound that runs the grounds. There's supposedly what they call the devil's footsteps imprinted in one of the building's cabinets. And then there's the Christmas haunting. And so on Christmas Eve, this in every year, supposedly, a four black horses pulling a carriage just appears in the driveway and rushing up the driveway. So it's running to get to the castle. And the driver's headless. He comes up to the castle, stops. And just before he finally brings the horses to a stop, the whole vision just disappears. The interesting thing about that to me was that there's no story attached to the castle that explains this. Okay. There's no event that, historically speaking, explains this. He just started coming in the mid-1800s, and what he's doing, who this person is, people sometimes say it's the devil because the devil's footprints in the other cabinet in the building. But the property has a huge history of being haunted. And this, they say, happens all the time. I found it really interesting that story, because usually there's folklore to go with it, but nothing in this particular instance. And I wanted to order this. I came across a story that I found personally really interesting. So anybody has ever looked at paranormal photographs, one of the best paranormal photographs of all time is called The Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. And the story goes that, that her picture was taken. She's supposedly seen running up and down the passages of the hallway, particularly this one staircase. And I didn't know the backstory on who this woman was. I just knew she was known as the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. But this puts this whole story into perspective. So in the mid 1700s, there was a gentleman by the name of Charles Townsend who married a really pretty young woman by the name of Dorothy Walpole. And they lived at Raynham Hall. And they were very happy in the beginning of their marriage. But something happened in her husband's head. And Charles Townsend began to believe that she was cheating on him, although there's no evidence that she ever did. And he became so unhinged by the concept that he locked her into the house and ordered the servants to never let her leave. And most of the year, she was kept in her little apartment. But around the holidays, he would let her go through the whole house. She still couldn't leave the house, and he had people with her watching her. And she would go up and down the one staircase and travel through this little narrow rabbit warren of stairs and rooms that she was allowed to go into. Staircase where she has been photographed was that staircase. And she's seen coming and going up and down the staircase, wearing a raggedy brown dress with tattered, you know, hem, because she couldn't go out and buy clothing. She literally had to make do with repairing what she had. And it was a terrible existence. And when she's approached, she looks at you. If you see her and you come close to her with a glowing face, and where her eyes should have been, there are just empty black holes. And she's only seen coming up and down the stairs most of the time. It's Christmas Eve, the night she was allowed to wander the building.
Why would her eyes be missing?
I don't know. There are so many stories of that. Where the eyes are missing. There's a hitchhiker story out in Arizona. I know of about a young woman who's seen on a desert road, and when people stop to pick her up, because there's nothing there. So your assumption is, you know, she got dumped there somehow, and she looks like she's in clothes from the 60s, long dark hair. And whenever you pull up to her and say, "Hey, miss, are you okay?" she'll turn around to look at you. She's perfectly normal looking in every respect, except her eyes are missing. And nobody knows who she was.
I don't suppose anyone's bothered to ask.
I don't know that. I mean, whenever you see that, you probably.
Yeah, because if I see an entity without eyes, yeah, I'm not thinking ghost. I'm thinking something a little more insidious. Yeah.
Well, the hitchhiker story from Roaring Springs is the same. He had no face. You know, so sometimes. There are ghosts that are just incomplete, ghosts that appear without their feet, things like that. You see that all the time. Why they chose their eyes, maybe she couldn't, she didn't see. She didn't get to see anything in life. Maybe that's how it manifested. I don't know. So, but I just thought it was just a sad story. I had no clue. I've seen the picture 100 times. Oh, it's the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall. I knew she supposedly lived there, but that's all I ever knew. I did not know the backstory until today. And what a sad backstory.
I agree. And now our viewers and listeners also know the backstory.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's one of the best known pictures in the paranormal community, but nobody ever told anything about it other than this newspaper. It was a magazine, I believe. It was a magazine that came in the 1920s and was taking photographs, and they were shooting up that staircase. There was nobody on the staircase, but whenever the photo came out, you can clearly see a woman in a cape and hood, and she's going, it's like a back from her back, and you can see her going up the stairs. And the photographer and his assistant both signed documents insisting, and that, you know, they couldn't explain it. There was nothing there. So the next one is actually from Michigan. It's a little town called Ludington. And there's a house in that area. It's a beautiful Victorian home. And the lady that lived in the house, her name was Vera Stark. And she was a bit eccentric. She would dress in only her winter fur coat and go outside to pick flowers at Christmas time. None of that makes sense, but it did in her head. So neighbors would see this old lady running around in a fur coat with no clothes on, trying to pull at the bushes to find flowers at Christmas time. And the house was supposed to be haunted. There were just so many different stories. Apparently, Mr. Stark had several daughters, and just tragic things happened to them. One of the girls died in the gymnasium. They never specified how. That was a gymnasium in the building. So, like, this was a huge mansion. They had bowling alleys, a gym, all these different things. And this particular girl, Vera, she ended up living her whole life there and kind of went balmy there. And she would go pick flowers in the winter in her birthday suit with her coat on.
Yeah, you don't really see too many winter flowers. Yeah.
No, but that's what she would tell them she was looking for. Mm-hmm. And she has been seen right around the Christmas holiday by many people throughout the years. And they, you know, obviously you notice something is out of place as a lady with no clothes on and a coat. trying to, you know, pick flowers off of bushes that don't have any. So people would like, oh, she must have Alzheimer's or whatever. And they would go knock on the door and say, there's an old lady out here. Does she belong here? Seeing if you get her help. And it turns out that she's been dead for quite a long time. But every Christmas, she goes and tries to find those flowers she was looking for the last few years of her life. And I just thought it was kind of a poignant story. Sort of sad and a little cute. So not all the ghost stories aren't good. In fact, a poltergeist seemed to haunt a family. This is the family of a guy named Edward Smith. And this took place in Brooklyn, New York in 1878. He had a nice little home, him and his family. And this was right before the Christmas holiday. One evening, his doorbell rang. He went to answer the doorbell. There was nobody there. Every night at about the same time, the doorbell would ring. And he would go to answer the doorbell and nobody be there. So he began to try to figure out a way to find out who the person was. So he would hide by the doorway and wait, and when the doorbell would ring, he'd rip the curtain open, nobody there. He decided to spread ashes on the porch and the stairs so he could see where they went. And it happened again and again and again, and nobody's footprints were in it. It happened in the middle of snowstorms, and nobody walked through the snow. And this just kept going on until one night it escalated sincerely. A brick went flying through his window.
Ooh, that'll get your attention.
Yep. And at the same time, the doorbell started ringing. There was this banging sound that started like somebody was pounding on the walls. He ran outside to look. There was nothing there. They called the police. The police came in. The police investigated. They couldn't find anything, although they did witness, you know, some of the events, some of the, you know, the doorbell was definitely rung. The police were standing outside waiting. They could hear the doorbell ring and there was like nobody standing there, which had to be very disconcerting for the poor police officer. All of this kind of geared up in the month of December and ended on Christmas Day. And the family thought they were good to go. Except the next year, it started again. And the next year, it started again. So Mr. Smith decides to sell the property. A move, and the next year it started at his new property. Oh. And it went on for years and years that this haunting occurred. Now they say that the original property, it happened up until the building was torn down. But it's an interesting story because, you know, there's police reports and stuff like this, and nobody has the faintest clue what happened. But it was definitely poltergeist-like activity, but it only started in the beginning of December and escalated till Christmas night. It was done. Yearly
and followed event. Yeah, and followed him to a new residence. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever it was had the ability to do that. It wasn't just something spontaneous. Now, this is one of my favorite stories because it was kind of an unexpected story. So, everybody knows what the Alcatraz is. Alcatraz was the prison in San Francisco, right on an island off of San Francisco Bay. And it was one of the worst prisons. It was a bad place for very serious criminals. Now, however, in the 1940s, there was a warden there by the name of Warden Johnson. And he decided to, there was a dormitory kind of situation there where like a boarding facility where people could come and stay. If you were like a prison guard and you had a tour for several days, you could just like rent a room. And then you didn't have to try to go all the way back into San Francisco. You know, obviously that would be time consuming and expensive because you had to rent, you know, to get catch a boat and all of this. So there was this building there that was considered a boarding house. And he had a lot of officers who would stay there and they would work like a week or two at a time and then have a couple, like 4 or 5 days off. And then they'd work 3 or 4 weeks and then have, you know, a week off, kind of a deal. So for Christmas in the mid-1940s, he decides to throw a Christmas party at this boarding house for all these officers, right? And the guards, the place even then had a reputation for being haunted. So as the Christmas party's going on and the festivities are winding down and the elbows have been bent a few times, people start lowering their guard and they start talking and telling ghost stories. And one of the guards said, you know, this building's supposed to be haunted. And this man suddenly is in the doorway and he says, oh, tell me a little bit more about that. I didn't know that. And he looked up and they all saw him. He was wearing a gray suit. He had a brimmed cap and mutton chop sideburns. He was dressed appropriately for the time period. So nobody thought anything about it. And, you know, they said, you know, who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm coming to do some business and with the warden in a day or so. And this is right before Christmas. And they're like, oh, okay. And they sit down. But so he sits down and they begin to tell this ghost story. And suddenly the room gets very, very cold. And the fire, even though it's still crackling, isn't putting out any heat. And somebody was like, what the heck's going on in here? It's so cold, blah, blah, blah. And somebody turns around and says to this guy, are you feeling cold? And he's just gone. He didn't get up. He didn't walk out of the room. He was in full view of everybody. He had taken a seat and was participating in the conversation until the sudden coldness came into the room. And he was just gone. And he crashed the Christmas party.
Fun.
I just thought that was an amazing story because, like, it is like the last thing you would have expected. And I would like to say that I had a ghost who crashed a Christmas party at my house. So those people who've been here with us a long time will know that I tell some stories about places I've lived. We lived in an old blue house that was actually the first floor of an old hotel. Prior to that, it had been a trading post in the 1700s. So this place went way back. In fact, the records for it predate the official written records for the county. And it's one of the original seven counties of Pennsylvania. And my middle boy was a Cub Scout. And so it was only a small rural group of people. So probably 6-8 women and their little boys. And, you know, we did the Cub Scout thing, teach them how to tie knots and all that good crap. But when we wanted to have a Christmas party this one year, nobody had a place to host it. Well, I had this great big old first floor of a hotel that we lived in. It had been turned into an apartment. And it was huge. I mean, the ceilings were 12 feet high. The rooms were like three times the size of a normal living room. It was just a huge building. So I said, well, hey, it's a little shabby chic because it's old fashioned, but you guys are more than welcome to have the Christmas party here. And in proper fashion, I have the fireplace going in the den, and the ladies and it's like a den kitchen thing, and the ladies are, you know, getting all the food ready on this great big old countertop, and the kids disappear to the bedroom to play video games, which is what kids do. And it's just all Christmassy. I really went all out to decorate, and the ladies got a cup of coffee or hot chocolate, whatever they wanted, and they were all sitting there together, and one of them said to me, so I guess you really do believe in ghosts. I mean, you write those stories. And I said, well, I do believe in ghosts, yes. But that doesn't mean I believe every place is haunted. There's other things that could happen to create that story as well.
Right.
And one of the ladies scoffed and she said, I don't believe in that crap. If you ask me, it's just too much imagination or maybe a little bit too much drinking. She was just really rude about it. And I said, I didn't really want to get into this conversation in the first place. It wasn't appropriate for the particular event. And I said, well, you know, everybody's entitled to their own beliefs. And let's just leave it there.
I detect a comeuppance.
Oh, yes. So there was this, I don't know how to explain it to you. It was like a support in the living room. But what they had done is they'd build a box around it. So it was kind of like a wishing well. So I had taken all these pine boughs and had stuck them in there with a little snow and, you know, lights, and it was real pretty. And I had this poinsettia, silk poinsettia, sitting on the edge of it. And eventually the lady said, she needed to use the restroom. So I said, oh, that's fine. You just go out to the living room and go down the hall, last room on the left. And she's like, fine. And one of the other ladies yelled after her, better watch out. There aren't any ghosts in here. And I was like, oh, Lord, we're never going to get past the ghost thing tonight. So I'm, you know, finishing putting out the last little platter of food for the kids to come out. And all of a sudden, I hear this woman yelp. And I hear a thump. And she comes flying back in. And she's like, we've got to go. Get my son. We've got to go. And I'm like, are you okay? Calm down. You know, she was really agitated and in fear. You could see it. Quite obvious. And, you know, I'm yelling back the hall for my son. And I'm like, you know, get so-and-so to come out. His mom wants to go. And I'm like, calm down. Just calm down. What happened? And she's like, this place really is haunted. And I'm like, well, I knew that. But what freaked you out? And she says that she was going out the to the living room, and right there where that little wishing well was, she said something smart-assy about, like, the ghost. Remember that woman yelled, don't let the ghost get you? And she's like, they're fucking imagination, basically. And immediately the flower floated up and dropped on her foot and smacked her in the foot. And at that point, she just turned tail and came back in, and that's why she was hysterical. She grabs her son and she runs out. She doesn't even get their coats. And they leave. And like 3-4 days go by. I keep calling her saying, hey, I have your jackets. Can I drop them off somewhere? And she finally calls me and she says, I'll meet you at the gas station down the street. I don't want to go anywhere near that place. You people are all insane. I can't believe you live in such a place. And it cracked me up because, you know, it was such a silly thing. Why did you get so excited? I guess I have a different perspective on it. But, you know, she insulted that poor ghost that came to the Christmas party. And so the lady let her know. I mean, we all knew that it was a woman ghost. We'd seen her 100 times in the house. And and then we had children, 2 children, that you would hear them running up and down the hall. But they were so fascinated with the Christmas lights and stuff that they would plug them in and turn them on. And I had a fiber optic angel. And I would come home from work and it would be plugged in. I'm the last person to leave the house. And I'm really a stickler for everything being unplugged. And I'd come in and it would be on and it would do this pretty shimmering lights thing. And I'd have to give a speech to the, you know, to this room and say, come on, guys, I know you like the angel. She's really pretty. But if you plug it in when I'm not home, you know how those old battery packs would get overheated? Sometimes it would do that. I'm like, you could burn the house down and then none of us will have a place to live. So you need to leave it alone. When I come home, I promise I'll plug it in for you. So for 4 or 5 days, it wouldn't be plugged in. But then I'd come home and it'd be plugged in again. Or I would forget to plug it in and I'd go to the bathroom and come back out and it would be plugged in. Like, oh, you didn't plug it in when you came in like you said you would. So we had every year for the 9 years we lived there, we had Christmas ghosts because they were very, very active in the Christmas season.
I think that's so funny how your non-believer became a believer very quickly. But then, oh, you're all crazy.
Yeah. It was, I mean, she was really rattled and it was just outside her ability to comprehend. Like for me, I saw 100 things happen in that house and they were interesting and fascinating. Music boxes playing when there was not a music box in the house. You would see, I called her Elizabeth, the shadow of this woman, or you would see like the back of her shirt and skirt as she went down the hallway. She would turn on the TVs. She would turn them off. She would, I have a good friend who would come to the house and she would open the bathroom door and come in and my friend would freak out. The children didn't like it when my friend came and slept in the boys' room. I think it was, and I had to actually go in and explain to the children, it's okay. The boys like sleeping in the living room. So you don't need to scare them and this woman and her child and make them leave. Please don't do that. Like we were so used to it. It was just like sharing with your roommates what was going on. It was never like that. I never was terrified in that house. But this lady freaked out. So, yeah, it was just one of the most fascinating. It was like living in an experiment, like a lab. You know, this place was haunted and it was really haunted. There was a multiple ghosts in this building, and I don't know why they were there. I don't know who they were. I don't know anything about them, except that we lived with them and we shared the property with them, and I was okay with that. So that's my personal Christmas ghost story. I found a really odd story. This took place in Victoria, British Columbia in 1890. So there was this young man by the name of David Fee, and he was 21 years old, and he was going to meet his family for midnight mass on Christmas Eve. Now, earlier in the evening, he had been attending a costume party, and he had gone as a clown. So he said to his mom, in order to do both things, he would have to leave the party early, and he asked his mom to bring his clothes to the church, and he would just step in the bathroom and change to be more appropriate, right? On his way to the church, he's almost there, and he has this white clown costume on with big red, you know, balls on it and stuff, and he looks silly. And this man steps out of an alley, and he says to him, "You challenged me." And he's carrying a shotgun. He raises a shotgun as he's talking, and he shoots this poor young man in the chest. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that this guy was waiting for somebody else and was in some sort of verbal tiff with somebody, some other man. And he mistook this poor young boy, David Fee, for this other person. And he bled out there and he died. And ever since then, on the anniversary, which would have been Christmas Eve night, David is seen in the clown costume hurrying down the street towards the chapel. And people claim he roams the streets outside the church, that he's been seen sitting on his grave. He just doesn't seem to have rested. And he only is seen, though, on Christmas Eve. And I just thought, what a strange story.
And ultimately sad.
Yeah, it is a very sad story. Another story that I found, which is kind of it's a Pennsylvania story. So there's a hotel called the Hotel Bethlehem in Bethlehem, PA. And it's a beautiful hotel. I've been there. And it has lots of history and folklore and ghost stories all attached to it. So in 1866, there was a young lady by the name of Mary Yohe, or May Yohe. Her family called her May, but her real name was Mary. And she was raised the daughter of of actors, and she would sing, and she had a great voice. And so she loved performing, and she performed with her parents throughout the years. And so she made it to Hotel Bethlehem and stayed there on occasions. And as she grew up, she became very successful. She ended up in Paris and traveling through Europe and what have you. She even married British aristocracy. And at the beginning, apparently the marriage was really good, but financial issues started to rear their ugly head, and he went bankrupt, and the marriage turned sour. She ended up divorcing him, and then she married an American soldier who stole whatever was left of her wealth that she had earned as an actress. And so in her latter years, she used to look back on her time at the Hotel Bethlehem as the best time of her life. She was young. She was pretty. She had, you know, this coterie of young men courting her, and she was making a living, and she was just in vogue. And visitors claim that her favorite time of year was Christmas, and she would always be booked there to sing for Christmas. So she would put on a little concert and play the piano and the whole nine yards. And apparently she returns. And many people have seen her dressed in her beautiful gown, either singing at the piano or pacing back and forth near the Christmas tree. And people say that they hear her singing, very faint, as if from far away, but Christmas tunes as she stands beside the piano. And I just thought that was a pretty story. And literally, there are just so many of these stories. It was amazing. One of the oddest ones I came across was at a place called the Crescent Hotel and it's in the in Arkansas. It was a beautiful hotel, and it's still a hotel to this day. You can go there and visit. And the story goes that on one particular Christmas season, you know, they were decorating as they do every year. They have the big tree and all the fake presents under the tree, the whole nine yards, you know, all that stuff. And it's just this gorgeous, elaborate decorations. And it was, when you came into the lobby, there was this like massive, like 20-foot tree, just gorgeous. And one night, people started coming into the lobby, going through the lobby for supper time. And the staff was shocked because somebody had moved the Christmas tree and all the furniture and all the gifts and everything, all the decorations to the one side of the bill of the room, opposite where they had originally been. So, and this would have been in, you know, it was just bizarre. So they're thinking, you know, what's going on? Why would this somebody have done this? Is this some sort of a prank? Who would play such a prank? Who are they trying to prank? And so they're talking to their superiors about, what do we do about this, right? And the superior's like, don't worry about it right now. Get supper over with, and we'll deal with it tonight when everybody goes to sleep. So they do. They get supper over with. They take care of their guests, so, you know, to the best of their abilities. Everything's really cool. And, you know, throughout the evening, they're going back and forth through that large entry area where everything's on the wrong side of the room now. And it stays that way. And then about 10 o'clock, everything's starting to settle down. And a couple of them decide they're going to go over and start putting everything to rights because it needs done before they can leave and go home. And everything's back where it belongs, just as though nobody had touched it. And the furniture's back where it belongs. It's all sitting in the right places, but everybody had seen it. Guests had commented on, why did you move everything to the other side of the room? Stuff like that. They all saw it. And this goes on and on. To this day, they claim that at Christmas time, whatever spooks and specters are at that hotel play pranks upon the staff by moving the decorations from place to place. And I thought, what a fun haunting. If you have to have a haunting, that's not a bad one to have. And I'm going to leave you with a legend, and this will be my last story. So in Krakow, Poland, there's a castle there called Wawel Castle, W-A-W-E-L, Wawel Castle. And it dates back from the Middle Ages. And supposedly, each of Poland's kings lived there from the Middle Ages forward. And there are so many legends and ghost stories, of course, you can imagine, something that venerable. But there's one legend that I thought was really interesting. Underneath the castle, there's a series of caves. And they're known as, they're under this great big hill by the castle called Wawel Hill. And they've been explored countless times through the years, so we know that they do exist. Supposedly, this is the rumor, there's a room in one of those great big underground areas, in one of those caves, that holds a statue of a dragon and the written record of humankind for millennia. The caves are believed to be inhabited by humans since prehistoric times. You know, I don't know how the records exist, if they're written on stone, written on the walls. I don't know what they are. But I just thought it was fascinating that this is there. Now, supposedly in the 11th century, King Casimir, who was just a teenager at the time, came across the castle caves entrance. And he started down through the tunnels of the caves. Inside the tunnels, he would later say he found a large stone emitting a glowing light. And from this light, a magical protective energy seemed to emit. The local legends say that to this day, all the ghosts of Poland's past kings, meet on Christmas Eve in that room, under in those caves, in that tunnel, to discuss the coming fate, whatever that might be, good or bad, for the next year of the people of Poland. And I just thought that was such a pretty legend.
Interesting.
It is. I mean, I don't know how much of it's true and how much isn't, and but I just thought it was a fascinating story that, you know, that they would gather together once a year, all the past kings, to consider, you know, how the next year shall go. So with that, I will wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I believe this will probably air just before the holiday. And a Happy New Year. And we'll go back to ghosts and ghoulies and long-legged beasties and things that go bump in the night.
All right. Thank you very much, Patty. And good night and Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Good night. Okay.